From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Orpheum Theater in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Peter
Sagal. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. My gosh, you're kind. In a plain-spoken, Great Plains kind of way. You're the best. It is a pleasure to be here in Sioux Falls. We have come here on a mission. Now, there are a lot of similarities between our current presidential campaign and that of 1972. Then, as now, the country was mired in an unpopular war. Then, as now, John McCain was getting on in years. All right, actually, they're not very much alike at all, but still, we have come to South Dakota to talk to one of the few men to run for president as a major party nominee and live to tell the tale. Senator George McGovern will join us later to tell us how it is done. You can decide for yourself which candidate you want to take his advice. But first, it's your turn to win something. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing fine. Who's this?
My name is Aaron Storter.
Hey, Aaron.
I'm Louisville, Kentucky.
What do you do there?
I'm a pastry chef.
You're a pastry chef?
Yes.
That is an exciting job. Does one sort of decide to become a pastry chef early in life, or does that you fall into it?
When I look back, possibly. I used to make a lot of mud cakes and set things on fire when I was young.
So. Right. And so that naturally led to that. Good.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show, Aaron. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to an author, humorist, and man responsible for everything you find at Baudet.com, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Aaron.
Also say hello to a deputy editor and a blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Aaron.
Hello, hello.
And lastly, say hello to a television personality and the man behind MoRocca180.com, Mr. Mo Rocca.
Good. How you doing, Aaron?
Excellent.
We're having a fine time here in Sioux Falls, but now we've got to move on to business. It's time to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain two of them. Do that. You'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I am.
All right. Here we go. Here's your first quote.
Dear friend, I am Ministry of the Treasurer of the Republic of America. My country has had a crisis that has caused the need for a large transfer of funds of $700 billion U.S. If you would assist me in this transfer, it would be most profitable to you.
Now, that was from a joke email that was being sent all around the country this week. It purports to be from the Secretary of the Treasury, Henry Paulson. He's asking in the email, for $700 billion for what?
For the government bailout of the banks.
Exactly, the Wall Street bailout. Now, there are a lot of questions yet to be answered about what would be the biggest bailout in history. Among them, why $700 billion? Why not say $699,999,000,000 just to make it seem like a bargain, you know? Well, an insider, this is true, at the Treasury told Forbes.com, quote, "We just wanted to choose a really large number," unquote. Rumor, in fact, has it that President Bush therefore pressed for 6 zillion kabillion. But he conceded that in negotiations. Now Paulson, Secretary of the Treasury Paulson, was in deep negotiations with congressional Democrats all week. The Democrats were said to be demanding tough concessions in return for the money. For example, they will get a receipt. And Paulson has also promised that he will call them once in a while. So you guys are all financial wizards. What do you think of this? Is this what we need? I mean, do we need this? Otherwise, we're all going to be, you know, trying to raise crops in our backyards.
You know, if they do this and we pay $700 billion, we'll all still be going to work like we do now, only the taxes will gradually have to get so high that we won't really be making any money. If we don't do this, the whole thing will come crashing down. There will be no jobs, we'll all stay home, and we won't be making any money. So if we don't do this, at least we don't have to go to work.
There is a good theory.
Now that's comforting. Can't Cindy McCain just slap it on her Amex? And then,
now that would be patriotic.
Well, no, and you also have to pay each month, so that would be good. There would be
no balance. You can't carry balance over the Amex.
I want the miles from it, though.
You could go like from here to the sun and back.
All right, here is your next quote.
This isn't the way a tested hero behaves. I think someone's putting something in his Metamucil.
That was David Letterman. He was annoyed that someone had canceled an appearance on Wednesday night on Letterman's program as the gentleman in question, quote, suspended his campaign. Who?
Oh, I forget his name.
Now you're just messing with my head.
That would be John McCain.
Yes. In one of the most surprising moments in a presidential race that's been surprising us since it began 46 years ago, John McCain on Wednesday announced he was suspending his campaign so he could go back to Washington and knock some heads together. If he didn't, he implied we'd all be eating our house pets by Sunday. He also asked to postpone Friday's presidential debate, suggesting instead, and this is true, that it be rescheduled for the night of the vice presidential debate. Well then, what do the vice presidential candidates do? The McCain campaign demanded, in that case, that the Biden-Palin death match take place in a more suitable forum, namely the website Hot or Not. Yeah, that would be totally great. We have saved, Aaron, the most shocking development of the week for last. Carl?
Please tell me I'm not the only one who is shocked beyond belief. This can't be real. How can you guys say this won't change anything? This changes everything.
That was one of only a myriad of fans of the singer Clay Aiken who were shocked, stunned, blown away. Unmanned, if you will. By the revelation that Mr. Aiken is what?
Oh, gosh. I missed this one.
The first letter of that word was right.
I believe he's gay.
He is gay. He is gay. Who knew? The actor and singer who rose to fame in American Idol 5 years ago confirmed that he is gay in a cover story for People magazine. He says he's come out now because, first, he has a son now and he wants to teach that son to be truthful in his life. And secondly, oh, come on. Many of Mr. Aiken's fans, known for their conservative musical tastes and for being as clueless as a box of hammers, were shocked by the revelation. You heard Carl quote one such fan from the site claynation.com. Another said she was so embarrassed about it, she didn't answer the phone all day. In other shocking revelations this week, John McCain said he was old. Barack Obama revealed himself to be black. And Yogi Bear didn't say anything. He just excused himself and jogged off into the woods. Carl, how did Aaron do in our quiz?
Aaron had 3 correct answers, Peter. Perfect score, so he wins our prize.
Well done, Aaron. Congratulations. We want to remind everybody that they can join us most every week at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, our home. For tickets and more information, go to chicagopublicradio.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Kiri,
yes.
What with all the political and financial hoopla, it's easy to forget that there are evildoers out there who want to do us harm. Well, the Department of Homeland Security wants to let us know that we still have to be wary, and they've enlisted whom to help them spread the alarm.
To help them spread the alarm? Well, let me see. If it's Homeland Security, it's got to be somebody really stupid. Can you give me a vowel on that one?
Well, Oscar the Grouch will demonstrate how to hide in a garbage can.
The Muppets!
The Muppets from Sesame Street, no less.
Oh, they're not stupid at all.
They're lovely. DHS has had for 5 years now a program to send their message of constant paranoia to children, but now they've brought in the big guns, the Muppets.
So...
And then
is Elmo like Red Alert?
No. It's right.
I don't like the Muppets being involved with Homeland Security. Next thing you know, you're going to have Statler and Waldorf running military tribunals.
The Muppets go to Gitmo. No, they've got it all worked out. Future messages will include Big Bird losing all his feathers due to a dirty bomb. Bert and Ernie toting shotguns to face down looters at Mr. Hooper's store. And this will be very instructive. In an upcoming episode, Cookie Monster will be arrested for hoarding food.
Oh, I feel like my innocence is wrecked.
The factionalism is terrible. You know, Bert is Sunni and Ernie is Shiite.
Did you know that?
And they got along before this war.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Mo Rocca, Tom Baudet, and Kerry O'Connor. And here again is your host at the Orpheum Theater in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. It's time once again to play the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Zachary Williams from Pasadena, California.
Hey, how are things in beautiful Pasadena?
Very nice. How are things in South Dakota?
Things in South Dakota are darned good. It's still warm here. The buffalo are grazing outside. It's cool. Well, glad to have you with us, Zachary. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what's Zachary's topic?
There goes the neighborhood.
This week we read a story about the peaceful lives of suburbanites being disrupted. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories of homeowners being annoyed. Choose the real one. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Absolutely.
First up, let's hear from Tom Baudet.
Have you ever wished those serrated grooves along the highway that keep you from drifting into the ditch could be tuned to play a rousing operatic overture? No, nobody has. But that didn't stop American Honda from grinding grooves into a road in Lancaster, California, designed to play a passage of the William Tell Overture, also known as the theme of the Lone Ranger, whenever a Honda Civic drives over it. But instead of cries of, "Who was that masked man?" from a grateful nearby subdivision, they are instead looking for the silver bullet to kill the thing. The grooves are tuned to a car with exactly the length and tire size as a Honda Civic. Other vehicles are also play the notes, but more in the way you'd hear them in a middle school band practice. It will wake you from a sound sleep, said neighbor Brian Robin, who lives a half mile away. Pauline East, the area film officer who agreed to allow the publicity stunt, characterized it as a historic event in the wrong location.
So, a musical road that's driving everybody nuts in Lancaster, California. Your next story of suburban angst comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Constables in Houston were called out Saturday to a domestic disturbance by worried neighbors, only to be greeted at the door by a not very happy hot nurse and her patient. It has become a common occurrence. You see, in the wake of Hurricane Ike in Texas, thousands of residents have been left without power or air conditioning to swelter in the 90-degree heat. For the first time, many Houston residents have opened their windows at night, and for the first time, they've heard their neighbors. Homeowners associations and police departments have been bombarded by calls from homeowners disturbed by the strange noises emanating from the neighbors' houses, often from their bedrooms. You try to explain to your 6-year-old why Mr. and Mrs. Johnson are making those noises, said a weary Midtown woman. Police say they counsel residents to keep their cool and pray for electricity.
All right, the open windows in Houston leads to some calls to police from unsuspecting and ignorant neighbors. Your next story of homeowners up in arms comes from Mo Rocca.
When the Ardmore Society of Friends in suburban Philadelphia heard about the persecution of China's Shaolin Gong religious sect, they swung into action. The Quaker congregation have long sponsored their Asian friends from afar, both groups espousing peaceful non-resistance. But when Chinese authorities came down hard on Chowlin Gong, the Quakers arranged their safe passage and took them in. Their first face-to-face meeting was anything but peaceful, though. Chowlin Gong members, it turns out, don't speak, but communicate solely with gongs. Each member carries one at all times, gonging out greetings and responses in a form of Morse code. Said Quaker Mary Barton, quote, "The constant gonging is driving us nuts. Last Sunday, two of them started debating. They were gonging over each other. As a Quaker, I know I shouldn't say this, but I wanted to kill them." The Quakers have since arranged the deportation of the Chowlin Gongs to Saskatchewan.
All right. Let us review your choices. From Tom Baudet, the story of how a road made to make music is driving people crazy in suburban California. From Kerry O'Connor, the story of how people just opening their windows in Houston has led to a lot of complaints and misunderstandings. And from Mo Rocca, the story of how a Chinese group who communicates only with gongs has made madmen out of a bunch of Quakers. Which of these is the real story of suburban disruption in the week's news?
I'm confident that it's Tom's story about the musical road.
You're confident?
Yes.
All right. Why are you so confident?
Because I've heard the notes played.
Oh, my gosh.
You've actually done this.
No, I heard it on the news.
Your choice, then, is Tom's story. Well, to bring you the real answer, we spoke to someone directly affected.
The bumps in the road were really keeping me up at night. And it really sounded like William Tell Mist.
You're exactly right. Very well. You got it right. Well, well done, Zachary. You got it right. You earned a point for Tom just for being truthful. You have won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your voicemail, home answering machine, whatever you got. You won it. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Well done. And now the game where we like to invite local notables onto the show to answer questions about things they haven't noted. Modern presidential politics has become ultimate fighting for nerds. It's fast, messy, people get hurt, but everybody still wears a tie or a pantsuit. To help us understand all this, we are pleased to welcome the distinguished former senator from South Dakota, the one-time Democratic presidential candidate from 1972, Mr. George McGovern. George McGovern, Senator McGovern, welcome to Wait, Wait.
Thank you.
So, if I remember correctly from 1972, you stood for amnesty, abortion, and acid. So, is that still your platform?
The triple A.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk a little bit about the 72 campaign because, of course, the other guy cheated, as we then found out. And you ran an upstanding campaign. Nothing seemed to go right for you. And the other guy, shall we say, succeeded, though. Of course, as the Democratic nominee, you had a certain disadvantage. You had to work with Democrats. And I remember you saying once that you actually gave a wonderful, stirring, barn burner of a speech. The problem was you had to give it at 3 in the morning. What exactly happened? Democrats were just hard to control at that time.
Well, Democrats are an ornery bunch.
Yeah.
They're also people of conviction who love to express those convictions, even if it is 3 o'clock.
Right.
Yeah. So we didn't pay any attention to television schedules. I mean, what's prime time got to do with giving the most brilliant acceptance speech? In American political history. So we had people talking until 3 o'clock. That's what I'm getting to.
Right, I understand. Well, yeah, you know, as you say, people of conviction. Where I'm from in Illinois, that has another meaning, but that's... Now, something was interesting that was very pertinent this week is that President Nixon refused to debate you.
That's correct.
What reason did they give?
I think he was terrified. We had always had presidential debates up until that time. You remember the debates between Kennedy and Nixon?
Yeah. Well, I've heard of them, I have to say. Yeah.
but Nixon stoutly refused to have one debate.
Aren't you supposed to, no matter what you may privately feel, I totally understand being scared. I, sitting on a stage right now with you, am somewhat terrified. But
me too.
Okay, good. But don't you have to, just for public consumption, give a reason? Yeah. What was the reason he gave?
He never gave a reason, and for some unexplained reason, the press never wrote him on that very hard. He used to talk about the bias of the liberal press.
No, really?
I never could find that liberal press.
Yeah, well.
But he never really gave an explanation for that. We never even had an explanation for things like what were seven people, two of them carrying White House passes, doing with their burglar gloves, their break-in tools in the Democratic National Headquarters again at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I heard something about that.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting,
Sonini,
people forget this. People think of Watergate and the scandal as happening post-election, but actually the break-in happened and was publicized before the election.
June 17th.
Yes.
A month later, we had the two conventions. It was still 3 months away from the national election, but no particular fanfare was raised about it.
Now, it is, of course, true that about 2 years after Nixon beat you in the 72 election, he had to resign in disgrace for the things that he had done during the election campaign. And to my knowledge, you never, indulged yourself by standing up in front of the American people and saying, "I told you so." And I would like to invite you now, if you like, to do just that. Go ahead. Indulge yourself.
Okay.
Be venal.
Okay. I've never said "I told you so" because I learned a long, long time ago, even before I got into politics, the one thing you don't want to say to somebody who already feels betrayed and injured is, "I told you so."
Right.
That's not a good idea.
But aren't you the betrayed and injured party here?
The whole country was.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I know after your defeat in 72, you ran for president twice more, if I'm not mistaken.
Briefly.
Mm-hmm. You ever thought doing it one more time?
I think now I've had about enough experience to do it.
You think so? You think you're finally ready?
John McCain is right. You need experience.
Yes. Lots of it.
To be in the White House. And I've had a lot of it. I've had a lot of time to think. Mm-hmm. So maybe 4 to 8 years down the road, I'll try it again.
I think so. Senator McGovern, we are so pleased to have you with us. We've invited you here today to play a game we're calling...
Now that's how you win an election.
Senator, history shows that you were the better man in the 1972 presidential election, but a fat lot of good that did. Clearly, you lacked the killer instinct. So we're going to ask you three questions about some more hard-hitting political tactics as practiced in American elections. We're going to ask you three questions taken from the book Anything for a Vote by Joseph Cummins. Get two questions correct, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is the senator playing for?
He is playing for Dave Munson from Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
All right, here's your first question. In 1824, Andrew Jackson was aiming for a rematch against John Quincy Adams, who had beaten him 4 years before. This time, Jackson was playing hardball. Among the successful attacks launched against the incumbent president were which of these? A, that President Adams smoked cigars in the European mode rather than chewing his tobacco like a true American? B, that President Adams had actually brought a billiard table into the White House for immoral purposes? Or C, that President Adams was secretly and shockingly a Reformed Baptist rather than the Methodist he claimed to be?
Probably the last one.
That he was a Reformed Baptist rather than a Methodist. Which would have been all kinds of hoo-ha back then.
Yeah.
No, actually, it was the billiard table.
Was it the billiard table?
Yeah.
Us Methodists are against all of those things.
Really? Well, apparently. So were the American people. Jackson supporters called the billiard table, quote, gambling furniture. This worked, and Jackson won handily. All right, well, here's your next question. Sometimes slander doesn't work. For example, Martin Van Buren won the election in 1836. Despite what bump on his road to the White House? Was it A, his opponent slandered him by calling him a, quote, Dutch American? B, he was arrested for riding his horse drunk through Washington? Or C, frontiersman and national hero Davy Crockett accused him of being a cross-dresser?
Maybe the first one?
The first one, they tried to slander him by referring to him as a Dutch American, mm-hmm. which would have been a term of disapprobation back in the day.
Yeah.
That's what you think?
I think so, yeah.
It was actually Davy Crockett called him a cross-dresser. Crockett, it turns out, I didn't know this myself, was sort of the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth of the day. He wrote a scandalous sort of basically hit book about Van Buren. In it, he wrote, and I quote, Martin Van Buren is laced up in corsets such as women in town wear, unquote. It went on in that vein. Mm-hmm. Fortunately for him, Crockett did not have to see the man he hated elected president because he was killed at the Alamo first.
didn't Davy Crockett wear fur?
Well, that was very manly at the time. But there, you're thinking of the famous...
He was all pimped out.
Yeah.
It's true.
I'm sorry, but I don't think the phrase Davy Crockett was all pimped out has ever been uttered in the history of English language.
He was totally draped in fur. I mean, it's ridiculous.
My God. All right.
You can see I know very little about pimpology.
Well, you need... Senator, you need to rush back to Washington and work on that.
Okay. All right, here we go. Well, this is your last question. See what you can do here. Now, the dirtiest election in American history, at least until yours, was between Samuel Tilden and Rutherford B. Hayes in 1876. There were widespread accusations of cheating, ballot stuffing, and, of course, there were smears on all sides. The Tilden people once accused Hayes of doing what? A, killing and eating a child. B, shooting his own mother. Or C, fathering 47 illegitimate children.
The third one sounds the most exciting.
Yo, yeah. You say that, I begin to think maybe Spiro Agnew was right about you. I don't know. But your choice is fathering 47 illegitimate children, which does, now that you mention it, sound like fun. No, the answer was B, shooting his own mother. The slander was spread in anonymous letters sent to Ohio newspapers. It was a swing state back then, too. So, Carl, how did Senator McGovern do on our quiz?
Peter, the senator continues to lose big.
But with honor.
Yes.
But with honor. Well, like I mean, you know, you're a man who rises above the contest he's forced to engage in. So I appreciate it. Appreciate you for doing it here. George McGovern is, of course, a former World War II decorated bomber pilot. He was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives and served with distinction in the United States Senate. He was the Democratic presidential nominee in 1972. He now works to fight child hunger around the globe. George McGovern, thank you so much for joining us. An honor to have you with us. Senator McGovern.
This is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Kerry O'Connor, Mo Rocca, and Tom Baudette. And here again is your host at the Orpheum Theater in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Carl is going to do some impersonations from this week's news in another round of Who's Carl This Time. If you'd like to play, give us a call. The number, of course, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT or 1-888-924-8924. Right now, though, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Tom, listen, as we all must on occasion, to Joe Biden.
When the stock market crashed in 1929, Franklin Roosevelt got on the television and didn't just talk about the princess of greed. He said, look, here's what happened.
So, Tom, That was a very insightful bit of political and historical commentary, but there was a couple of errors there. I just want to know if you could identify them for us.
He wasn't the president when the stock market crashed.
That would be one.
And unless he was standing on a prototype, there was also no, when he said it, there was also no television.
Mm-hmm. There was no way for him to be on television. Yeah. Yes, that's right. although I do like your insight, Tom, he could have been standing on a television, thus on a TV.
There was experimental television in the late 20s.
Thank you. So well, thank you for defending Mr.
Watson, can you see me?
Yeah.
Remember Lincoln's reaction to the last episode of MASH?
It's true. I mean, it is true that Roosevelt didn't do anything like that, but it's the sort of thing he would have done had
he'd been president had there been television.
Sure.
Back to Biden, since his vice presidential nomination, everybody's been predicting that Joe Biden would only be able to keep his foot out of his mouth for so long, and finally this week he did indeed start kicking himself in the bicuspids. In addition to his interesting history lesson, this week Biden called paying higher taxes, quote, patriotic, and said that an Obama campaign advertisement criticizing McCain was, quote, terrible. He then issued a statement, a written statement, saying, no, that ad was completely justified and fair. We suspect that Biden did not actually write that statement because there were no ridiculous gaffes in it.
A lot of gaffes. You can't. His sentences are undiagrammable also. They go all over the place.
Yeah. The thing that drives me crazy about Joe Biden, personal thing, he says literally when it's not literally true.
Oh, right. That's true. He tells you that.
Yeah.
It's literally true.
Yeah. It's like it's literally covering the whole country. You're like, no, there is no cover over the country. Stop saying that. Kiri, good news for old people. A Japanese company has designed a new safety device for the elderly to make sure they don't fall and break a hip. What is it?
A foot pillow.
Close. Close.
A hip pillow.
Hip, not quite. It's good. It's useful in case the air brakes on the walker fails.
Ooh, this is interesting.
It is interesting.
No, I don't want to give it to you.
Oh no.
You were competing.
Yeah. Okay.
No, you're not gonna get it.
He's shooting daggers at me.
It's like
I think automotive.
That's two clues.
Oh, airbag.
Yes, airbag.
I'm sorry.
Wearable airbag.
Oh, that was worse than labor.
Help, I've fallen. And wait a second, I've bounced back up. A Japanese company has invented the old person airbag, which will rapidly inflate with 15 liters of gas as soon as it detects any sudden motion, which means it could be triggered by your grandmother falling or John McCain trying to cancel the presidential debate.
Well, can I ask a serious question about walkers?
Yes.
Oh, every single old person in the entire world has, like, tennis balls on the bottom of their walker.
I've noticed that.
Why don't they just make them with the tennis balls on them?
Well, what are the tennis balls for?
I think the tennis balls are for the bottom of your walker not scraping your floor.
Oh, is it also reflective things that it can be seen? Or I don't know. It's bright.
I don't know.
Well, back to the airbags. You know, my mom, God bless her, fell and broke her hip, and she only weighed about 90 pounds when that happened. And if there would have been an airbag involved, it would have thrown her across the kitchen and broken her neck, too, probably.
Well, no, that's what she needed, an airbag for her neck, also.
Oh, right. Oh, there could be a whole series of them. She'd be bouncing around like
a Michelin man.
A chain reaction.
Ricocheting all over their apartment.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago. And you can download the Wait Wait podcast for your computer or MP3 player. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, my name is Lenore, and I'm calling from the College of William & Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia.
The College of William & Mary.
Yes.
A lovely place.
It is.
It's nice that it's named for people by their first names.
Yes.
Because it's so friendly. You know, it's like not like Yale, which is like his last name.
It's not that friendly. It could be Bill & Mary.
That's true. Billy and Mary. That'd be even better.
Bill and Mary.
Well, welcome to the show, Lenore.
Thank you.
You're going to play Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle will read you three quotes from this week's news. If you correctly identify or explain two of them, Carl will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I definitely am.
All right. Here is your first quote.
Now I know why a lot of America is crazy about you.
That was Asif Ali Zardari, the new president of Pakistan, talking to... someone who visited the UN for the first time this week, who?
Was it Sarah Palin?
It was Sarah Palin. This week, Governor Palin got a field trip to the UN after her running mate, John McCain, agreed to sign the permission slip. She got to see the Secretariat building and try on a translator headset, plus she got to have lunch at the Cheesecake Factory. She also met a bunch of foreign leaders. And reporters were not allowed in on the sessions. The result, then, was just a series of still pictures of her standing next to Henry Kissinger and the presidents of Afghanistan and Colombia. She's like that garden gnome that gets its picture taken all around the world. Except, of course, that garden gnome has actually been around the world.
It has a passport. The garden gnome got a passport 3 years ago.
I know, yeah. I know.
Yeah, well, at least Henry Kissinger doesn't try to undress the garden gnome with his eyes.
Yeah. That was a little creepy.
Can you? I mean, by the time she got out of there with the guy from Pakistan, Henry Kissinger pawing her, I mean, she must have just went back and taken a shower. You know?
Like, it was really...
Yeah.
All right, Lenore, here is your next quote.
Two middle-aged men were arrested about 2 p.m. for trying to steal a ballpark sign reading, beer, $8.50.
According to the New York Times, those two men were among 18 people arrested as a famed New York institution closed its doors this week. What?
Yankee Stadium?
Yankee Stadium, very good. On Sunday, Yankee Stadium hosted its last game as the Steinbrenner family, who owns the team, prepared to move to a facility that is more suitable for the modern Yankees. It looks like a cross between Sauron's Black Tower from The Lord of the Rings and the Death Star. Shortstop Derek Jeter told the Times that he would miss his pregame ritual of touching the Joe DiMaggio sign. It's a faded banner hanging above the tunnel to the clubhouse. And third baseman Alex Rodriguez said he would miss touching Madonna, a faded pop star sitting along the first base line. All right, Lenore, here is your last quote.
You could take all the elephants in the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, feed them rancid chili and rotten boiled eggs for a month, and they could not create a bigger stinker.
That was the Fresno Bees Take an Award ceremony this week that some critics say was the worst in its 60-year history. What?
The Emmy.
Right! There were some winners during the Emmy broadcast. Like the basic cable show Mad Men, and the guy watching in Schenectady who changed the channel to watch a Lassie rerun and Nick at Night. But for the most part, the award ceremony was a complete and utter disaster. You heard just one of the many negative reviews. Roger Catlin said the five reality TV anchors who hosted the event were the worst ever. MSNBC said the worst episode of Dancing with the Stars was still better than the Emmys. And the AP asked the question on everybody's minds who watched the show, quote, are the TV writers still on strike? Carl, how did Lenore do?
Very, very well, Peter. Three correct answers. Lenore, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done, Lenore.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for playing. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Tom Beaudet has the lead. He has 4 points. We have a tie for second place. Kerry O'Connor and Mo Rocca each has 2.
All right, we've flipped a coin. Kiri has elected to go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Motorists in Atlanta and Nashville struggled to deal with recent blank shortages.
Gasoline.
Right. Investigators began developing theories to last weekend's deadly bombing at the Marriott Hotel in blank.
Islamabad.
Yes, in Pakistan. Scientists revealed that the controversial blank broke hours after it was turned on and will take 2 months to repair.
Large Hadron Collider.
Yeah, in an attempt to challenge Apple, blank unveiled their long-anticipated cell phone this week.
Google.
Right. Parents were outraged when a middle school teacher in California wrote a list on the blackboard of blank.
Oh, I knew this one. I don't know this one.
He wrote on the blackboard the 15 curse words that they must never, ever use. An urban farmer, an optical physicist, and a jazz musician were among those named to receive blanks this year.
MacArthur Genius Grants.
Right. Thomas Dorfline, the zookeeper, who raised the beloved Berlin polar bear blank, died at age 44.
Kurt.
No, Knut. Knut. Two employees from Georgia's Center for Puppetry Arts were forced to flee the center parking lot with their bird puppet when blank.
Attacked.
By?
Something. A larger bird.
Good enough. The puppet was attacked by a hawk. Jeff Domke and Alan Lewis were taking pictures of what must have been one realistic-looking brown thrasher hand puppet when a hungry hawk swooped in for a quick thrasher lunch. Domke and Lewis fled the scene as the hawk attacked the puppet before realizing, sadly, they just don't make brown thrashers the way they used to. Carl, how did Kiri do?
Kiri had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Kiri has taken the lead.
Well done.
Thank you.
Nicely done. All right, Mo, you're up next. Fill in the blank. The 20-year-old hacker accused of breaking into blank's Yahoo email accounts did so by guessing her security words.
Sarah Palin.
Right. Tensions grew after troops from Pakistan fired on NATO planes monitoring their border with blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. Concerned about tainted products, the EU announced it would ban products from China that contain blank.
Milk.
Yes. In the wake of LA's deadly train collision, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger signed a bill outlawing blanking by drivers.
Texting.
Right. A woman in Britain successfully raised an orphaned baby hare by blanking.
She raised it by maybe what she did is she moved into a warren, a hutch. She built a hutch and she lived in it.
No, she kept it in her bra. Oh. Defying federal rules against partisan activities, a group of blanks plan to endorse a presidential candidate on Sunday.
Priests.
Yes, pastors. In honor of the bicentennial of Abraham Lincoln's birth, the U.S. Mint unveiled 4 new designs for the blank.
Either the... No, it's got to be the $5 bill.
No, the penny.
Oh,
a bank robber in Germany who returned to the scene of the crime was caught after a witness recognized her blank.
A bank robber after a witness recognized her... she was a bank robber. She was a bank robber. Maybe it was her butt?
Yes, her butt. There you are. Sandra Miser. A woman named Sandra Miser. She threatened bank workers with a gun. She got away with approximately $24,000. Witnesses were only able to tell police that she had a very large backside and, quote, powerful thighs. But that was enough for an ID weeks later when one of the witnesses found himself in line behind her. Said one bank worker, quote, he said he recognized her bottom straight away. He'd never forget something that big. Carl, how did Mo do?
Mo had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 and is tied with Kiri for the lead.
Wow.
You hate ties.
I hate ties. Tom, put us out of our misery.
All right. How many, then, does Tom need to put them out of their misery and win the game?
He needs 5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
How about a three-way tie? Is that for him? I'll try not to.
All right, here we go. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. Police found a bulletproof vest and a weapon inside the car of a man arrested outside blank's home.
Barack Obama.
Yes, Barack Obama. Accused of withholding information about gifts he received from an Alaskan contractor, the trial of blank began Thursday.
Senator for life, Ted Stevens.
Right. A team of astronauts from blank launched into space Thursday to carry out that nation's first ever spacewalk.
China.
Right. Police in South Bend, Indiana, were called in after a fight erupted between two brothers over blank.
Their Xbox.
No, their last Hot Pocket. After being hospitalized briefly, celebrity crime writer Dominic Dunn returned to court for blank's robbery and kidnapping trial.
O.J. Simpson.
Right. Run DMC and Metallica were among 9 nominees for induction into the blank.
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right. Police told a woman skating nude along Portland's waterfront to tone it down after blank.
People kept recognizing her butt.
No. She was told to cover up after construction workers complained.
Whoa. You know, I used to be in the trades at one time. Yeah. They've really gone downhill.
They really have. Jennifer Moss, also known as Earth Friend Jen, just wanted to skate around the Portland, Oregon waterfront nude, but in doing so, she offended those bastions of modesty and moral decency, the local construction workers. Police asked her to tone down the act and cover up, and 3 of the construction workers swooned and were sent home with a case of the vapors. Carl!
That's what the unions will do.
Yeah. Carl, did Tom do well enough to win?
Tom had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 14 and ties with Kerry O'Connor and Mo Rocca. They're both...
Hold on. No. I'm sorry to ruin the fun, but Kerry and Tom are both actually 13-year-old Chinese girls. So I have won.
Now, panel, how will our government raise that $700 billion it needs? Mo Rocca.
Sarah Palin will put on some lipstick and seduce the money from the president of Pakistan.
Kerry O'Connor.
We're going to have a bake sale for Canada. We only have to sell them 1,400,000,000 brownies.
And Tom Baudet.
Here's what we do. We make 10 million low-interest car loans to buy only American-made cars. We package those loans into high-yield government treasury bonds, sell them to Russia, who will then have to repo the cars after all the loans go bad. American auto exports surge. We get our money back. Russia learns a hard lesson about Western capitalism.
Well, if the government does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Kerry O'Connor, Mo Rocca, and Tom Baudet. Thanks to Carol Roberts and Fritz Miller and everyone at South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Thanks to our fantastic audience right here at the Orpheum Theater in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And thanks to you all for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.